and share common principles, principles of justice and progress, tolerance, and the dignity of all human beings. I do so recognizing that change cannot happen overnight. I know there's been a lot of publicity about this speech, but no single speech can eradicate years of mistrust, nor can I answer in the time that I have this afternoon all the complex questions that brought us to this point. But I am convinced that in order to move forward, we must say openly to each other the things we hold in our hearts, and that too often are said only behind closed doors. There must be a sustained effort to listen to each other, to learn from each other, to respect one another, and to seek common ground. As the Holy Quran tells us, be conscious of God and speak always the truth. That is what I will try to do today, to speak the truth as best I can. So I have known Islam on three continents before coming to the region where it was first revealed. That experience guides my conviction that partnership between America and Islam must be based on what Islam is, not what it isn't. And I consider it part of my responsibility as President of the United States to fight against negative stereotypes of Islam wherever they appear. But that same principle must apply to Muslim perceptions of America. Just as Muslims do not fit a crude stereotype, America is not the crude stereotype of a self-interested empire.
Well, at this point, before we address the issue specifically, let's bring in Al Jazeera's senior political analyst Marwan Bishara. He's in Washington. Marwan, what did you make of Obama's overall attempts to reach out to the Middle East?
Well, he certainly succeeded to a large degree, Mariam. The speech actually had two levels. I've read it and reread it, and I can notice simply a strategy in this speech. The rhetoric, the tone, the quotes, what we call the art of speech, has certainly been quite a dazzle, if I might use the expression. It really succeeded in setting a tone, and this should not be underestimated, Mariam. A new tone of approach towards a whole region that has really misunderstood at times, but also understood all too well the American misconception of the greater Middle East. On the other hand, Mariam, when it came to specific policy proposals, specific approaches to resolving certain questions like Afghanistan, Pakistan, like Palestine, like the nuclear question, here, of course, there's going to be a debate. This is the President of the United States. So here the preaching stops and the American interests start. And here where I think the real debate over the transformation of policies is going to happen in the weeks and months to come.
Well, Obama has made some very public demands for Israel to stop settlement activity, perhaps a sign that he's serious about regaining America's role as an honest broker in the region.
Well, to be honest about that, Mariam, throughout the last three or four decades, American presidents have took the position that settlements were either illegal or unhelpful to the negotiation, certainly unhelpful to a Palestinian state. So this was the position of many presidents before President Obama. What some would have hoped from President Obama was to say, freeze the settlements in order in the future to dismantle the settlements, because, of course, you can't have a sovereign, viable Palestinian state with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of settlers on its land. But he didn't go that far. He stayed within the accepted, if you will, parameters of the international roadmap that was agreed upon by President Bush as well as the international quartet.
Okay, Marwan, thanks very much indeed for your thoughts on this. I'm sure we'll get back to you a little later on. Marwan Bishara in Washington, D.C.
Well, a great deal to talk about, much to chew over, the Israeli-Palestinian issue, Iran, democracy in the Middle East. Let's work through them in the same order as we promised we would do, in the same order that Obama did, beginning with what he called extremism and his specific references to Afghanistan and Pakistan.
In Ankara, I made clear that America is not and never will be at war with Islam.
Of course, that doesn't exclude making 2 to 3 million Pakistanis refugees and ramping up the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Thank you, Fuhrer Obama. Anyway, that's an analysis you'll probably be able to hear at greater length in its entirety at another time on Free Radio, because it's now time for Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned.
Lose your shoes and grab a drink. Sing and hit and kick off your feet. Shoot that lovely stranger glance. Do that very, very gypsy dance. Raise all hell up to the moon. Cause you know it's leaving soon. Just soak it all in. Hey, hey. When you got no place to go. Yeah, you need a little hope.
Strath D, from her album State of Curiosity. That was the first selection, House at the End of the Road. I just ran into Julie yesterday at the farmer's market. She was taking donations for her CD. I said, cool, let's put it on the air. She apparently has been playing around Santa Cruz for a while. She's not a frequent street performer downtown, but she is there every so often, and she's got a great voice, as you can hear. I'm not much of a music critic, but I like to give people a chance to sing on the air, particularly those that are singing on the street. So I'm going to be hearing a little more of her throughout the show. And you are tuned to Free Radio, by the way, in case you've forgotten, or Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, also streaming at www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and for 2 hours I'll be with you playing a lot of interviews, hopefully chatting with some of you on the phone if you choose to call in, and encouraging you to come to a protest on Saturday to restore the civil rights of homeless people downtown in Santa Cruz against the ever-present, ever-malignant, and apparently so far ever-invulnerable sleeping ban, the law that criminalizes poor and homeless people from actually falling asleep, that's the wording of the law, after 11 o'clock at night on any, and I underline any, public property, even in a private vehicle of your own parked on public property. So it's criminal behavior to engage in survival sleeping in Santa Cruz. Admittedly, only 30 to 75 tickets are issued per month, and we have 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there, so you've got a good chance of not being ticketed. But the idea of living in fear, of not being able to sleep in safe areas, of not being able to use police services for fear you will be hassled, is something that impacts everyone who has to, for one reason or another, sleep outside. And in fact, with me this evening is a woman who has experienced that. She came to Santa Cruz last night. She's trying to deal with some problems in her own life, as I understand it from conversations with her, in terms of family difficulties. And she's meeting with a warm reception at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is where I found her today. Would you like to sign in, madam?
Yes, my name is Jess, and I actually would like to comment on what you've just said, because I did basically come to a point in my life yesterday where I realized I needed to get away from my normal everyday life to try and sort out some things. So I got in my car, and I started driving, and I ended up in Santa Cruz. And I had the goal of trying to find a campground where I could set up a tent and sleep. On my way to try and find the campground, I actually had some police vehicles pull in front of me and tell me that the road was shut down and I couldn't get to the campground that I was trying to get to. Fortunately, after that, I did run into a nice young man who led me to, in my opinion, overpriced hotel room because I was...
How much was it?
It was $66, but I was preferring to stay, outside in nature where I wanted to. But unfortunately, my attempt at that was barricaded by the police in the street.
Now, you're a woman who's been regularly employed as a nurse for quite a while.
The past almost 7 years, correct.
So you're not, in the status of a homeless person who, you met a number of folks today they're living on the streets. They'll be part of this protest in front of in front of Bunny's Shoes, which is a somewhat upscale shoe emporium downtown on Pacific Avenue, which was one of the signatories to the injunction against two homeless street musicians, Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, who are now banned from sleeping downtown on pain, and you were just reading this over and commenting on it,
yes,
on pain of a fine of up to $1,000 and jail time of up to 5 days in jail. And you might say,
well, this is after three acts, 6 months in jail.
Right, and that is a second law that they could be charged with, which they are also in danger of running afoul of. Actually, that law affects the broader homeless community tonight. The injunction only affects this couple at the present time because only they are enjoined. But it's an example of the kind of tools that the police want to use and the kind of lengths the city attorney and the downtown association will go to frighten, I would say even to terrify, homeless folks downtown. Maybe that's a little too strong. I mean, they're not using axes.
No, but I do have to say that I actually have experienced that own fear in my life, because last night, rather than spending $66 on a hotel room when I'm unemployed and have a mortgage payment due that I haven't figured out how to come up with, I would have preferred to sleep in my vehicle. And the only reason I chose not to is because I've heard stories from people who have told me they have gotten in trouble with the cops for sleeping in their vehicles on public streets. I have paid a lot of tax dollars in my days, and for some reason, if I want to park my car on a public street that I have paid to help maintain and sleep in it, I don't think that should be a crime.
Well, I'm afraid the Santa Cruz City Council disagrees with you.
Yeah.
And they've had this law enforced called the Santa Cruz City Sleeping Ban Sections of the Camping Ordinance, Municipal Code 6.36010A, actually, for those who are legally inclined, since 1978. And
wow.
That is the basis on which these two homeless musicians have been found to be worthy of a court-ordered injunction against sleeping downtown. I mean, they can't sleep downtown under penalty of immediate jail, and they can't sleep anywhere in the city under penalty of one of these tickets, three of which, unattended, will result in a second crime, which you were reading about, a misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months or a year. It might even be a year, but I think it's at least 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. as a maximum. You don't usually get that much, and there's no point in fining homeless people. But the point is to deter them through these increased fear factors. I mean, we see this happening in the prison system. You see it happening with people who are involuntarily hospitalized under the threat of all kinds of not just consciousness-destroying drugs, but drugs that actually physically destroy you eventually if you are, you know, forced to take them regularly. They can give you, you know, tardive dyskinesia. They give you epilepsy. You know, epilepsy, they give you, they lead to increased increased risk of
suicide is,
well,
one thing.
That's true. That's also been shown to be the case for some of these inhibitors. What do they call it? They're called, they're
NAOIs,
dopamine inhibitors.
Dopamine, things that affect your dopamine uptake. Yeah, dopamine reuptake.
I'm never quite.
You know, I never actually, as a nurse, and I've been a nurse for 7 years, psychiatric drugs was actually never my area of specialty. For some reason, it never made sense to me. There's a lot of those drugs that I question a great deal because I don't know that we've done enough research yet to really know the long-term effects they have on people. And unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people that have had mental health diagnoses made have had other alternatives to treatment or therapy to deal with maybe some of the problems they're going through. But, yeah, what you say touches very much to my heart.
Yeah, I think it's serotonin receptor inhibitors, but it also has to do with dopamine. I always confuse serotonin and dopamine. One has to do with depression. The other has to do with so-called, I guess, schizophrenia. These are, of course, terms
they're
that
labels.
Were coined in
they're
the
19th labels.
Century to cover, really to falsely analogize, I think, states of crisis that people sometimes find themselves in, mental responses they have that can be dysfunctional, but can also, of course, be preparatory to growth periods and a new awareness, and also things that people come out of, provided they are not addicted to and forced to engage in all kinds of medications, which have a huge pharmaceutical lobby and a huge psychiatric lobby behind them. You know,
that's very true.
You know, that's a problem. And that is something, of course, you know, that we've been talking about on this station, Jess, before, well, many times. I recommended earlier to a book called Mad in America by Robert Whittaker. I recommend it to others, too. And also,
I actually think that I just ordered that book online. Since you said it, I was thinking about it. And I think I came across it in my research and have already ordered it.
Yeah, and I recommend, we also, of course, have interviewed Whittaker a number of times on this show. And I believe the newspaper Street Spirit, which can be found soon, hopefully, the June issue, from a homeless vendor near you, although there are unfortunately very few homeless vendors vending it. But it's a good thing that homeless vendors can use to, you know, pay for one-fifth of a cup of coffee or something. It's pretty expensive to buy a cup of coffee in Santa Cruz. Well, one-third of a cup of coffee, it's a dollar, maybe one, I don't know, half a cup of coffee. In any case, you know, it's an important area to look into. And again, I've kind of been roaming based upon, you know, we kind of been jumping around here, but the point I was making was that there is a protest coming up this Saturday. It's organized by Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or HUF, the group I often push on this station. We meet every Wednesday at 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning at the Sub Rosa. And the Human Rights Organization, which will be meeting on Saturday. Once our protest is over, we're going to meet when the protest is finished, I believe, if folks have any energy left. Again, at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, for those of you who are interested. And I hope to post something online at Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, for those of you who can keep up with me here. And if I'm going too fast at any point, please do give me a call and let me know. I'll be happy to repeat this stuff. If you want to catch it off air, I can also catch you later if you give me a call on the HUFF, H-U-F-F, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, or 423-4833. However, if you want to reach me in the studio, talk to me and Jess, the number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Hey, isn't that convenient? Free Radio Santa Cruz. So you can call in and we can chat. I also will try to answer emails, but sometimes I space those out. So the best thing to do is to call in. What's happening otherwise? Well, tonight I believe there actually is a something interesting from my perspective. I'm a big fan of polyamory. I believe that in many relationships with many people, I should be so lucky. But there's a discussion of polyamory happening at the Ugly Mug Cafe, and I believe that is in Soquel. And I'm going to kind of go to the Indy Bay to give you the exact details, if I can find them. And I think I probably can. It may take me a moment, however. But I think I will. This is polyamory, of course, is sort of an alternative to monogamy, which is the current social form that most folks are, well, that we are, most folks do, whether they're living either with benefit of a marriage or without benefit of marriage. It's called the Radical Love Workshop. It's at 6:30 p.m. Goes from 6:30, which starts in about 20 minutes, to 8 o'clock. I don't know who these folks are, but it looked interesting to me, and it's too bad I can't go there because I'm on the air here. So you have to bring all your polyamorous experience into the studio and educate me. This is building on her feminist critique of love and relationships. It looks like Wendy O'Matic. Presents the major concepts and challenges that we face trying to reinvent our relationships outside the dominant social paradigm. Radical love is the freedom to love who you want, how you want, and as many as you want, as so long as personal integrity, respect, honesty, and consent, oh boy, that's a big order, are at the core of any and all relationships. Radical love primarily focuses on love and intimacy, not sex and sexual conquest. Down, boy, down. At the heart of this work are three components: feminism, social activism, and revolution. The workshop is followed by a discussion and intended to create a non-judgmental support group. Wendy O'Matic is the author of Redefining Our Relationships, Guidelines for Responsible Open Relationships, a feminist critique of love and relationships outside the status quo. As an educator, role model, and spokesperson for the polyamory community, Wendy has become a revolutionary activist of the heart. Since the release of her book, she has taught over 100 radical love and relationship classes globally, excavating important social trends and future of alternative relationship models for the 21st century. As an activist for social change, Wendy is pushing the boundaries on firmly rooted notions in mainstream society on relationships, love, gender, sexual equality, and sexual politics, available for educational and motivational discussions on the topic of alternative relationship models. And, boy, the words in here are tongue twisters, I'll tell you. But, you know, it sounds interesting, and responsible non-monogamy. You can visit her at her website, for those of you who can't make it out to the Ugly Mug at 6:30, and it costs $20 to $10 sliding scale, but it says everyone welcome. I'm always glad to see those last two words. www.wendyomatic.com, in case you want to check out her stuff. Maybe I will. I'll make a note of that for my future reference. So, again, the call-in number here, in case you want to call in, is 427-3772, and I have in the studio with me Jess, who I dragged in here. Not really against her will, but...
Actually, not against my will at all.
She forced me to bring her in here. I'm not going to call the police yet. So, in any case, I appreciate your coming, and perhaps...
Thank you for having me.
You'll enjoy it, and perhaps we'll all learn something. And if not, hopefully it'll be relatively painless. There's going to be an interesting thing coming up on Sunday. I do a Sunday show from 9:30 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And up in Eureka, California, Tracy Heron is a lawyer who has been working with, I believe, TAD and some other folks around the very issues we were talking about and that we will be talking about at 1 o'clock in front of Bunny Shoes on Saturday, which is the right of people to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. That is to say, the right to sleep legally someplace, because it is a human necessity no matter how poor you happen to be. And in Santa Cruz, of course, that leaves out hundreds and hundreds of people and puts them in some apprehension each night, as you were saying yourself, Jess, about how you felt trying to get
it. And I actually, as you say that, it makes me think of something, if you don't mind me interrupting.
Please.
But I actually, you know, there's another pretty basic human necessity that we all have, and that's going to the bathroom. And, you know, I've actually been in situations where I've had to go so bad that I could not hold it. And I almost did get a ticket. I managed to talk my way out of the ticket.
You shameless hussy.
I squatted behind a bush, and there just happened to be an officer on the corner somewhere. And it was somewhere where I thought I was pretty hidden. But, you know, that's something that you got to do, too. And if there aren't public restrooms provided and there aren't places where people can go to do things that are necessities, that their body, I mean, you can't, it's something you have to do.
For sure. And Santa Cruz has closed down all its 24-hour, we never had 24-hour restrooms. We had 24-hour porta-potties that were set up in lieu of and in anticipation of some 24-hour bathrooms, but that died along with proposals to reform the sleeping ban, proposals to set up public plaza squares, proposal to reform the police department. All these things have been set aside in favor of, I think, older, less, more repressive alternatives, mm-hmm. which essentially exclude classes of people and remind us that the main purpose of the rich we're all living and working for is for the rich. And, you know, if necessary, we'll bail them out. We'll go to foreign countries to go to war for them. You know, we will have our minds redefined to, according to the psychiatric label of the moment so we can fit into the system that's set up to maintain the current system of wealth and power.
I couldn't agree more.
And it's, you know, I'm being a little glib about this, but I wonder if this isn't really pretty close to the truth. And, of course, that's up to, we all should make our own decisions up on those issues. No need to jump into the party line. You know, you should make a decision based on what your experience is and what your reading teaches you, you know, what your friends, based upon their experience, what your surfing the internet shows you. Speaking of which, a couple of international stories. U.S. to keep troops in Sadr City past deadline. One day after pledging to abide by the deadline, the United States reaches a deal with the Iraqis to ignore it. This is by Jason Ditz, June 3rd. This is, I guess, today.
Yesterday.
Thanks. Just yesterday, America's top commander in Iraq, that was the day before yesterday, actually, General Raymond Odierno, said that a deal had been finalized and that all U.S. troops would be definitely out of all of Iraq's cities by June 30th, as required by the Status of Forces Agreement, SOFA, as it's called, the two nations signed last year. Today, officials are confirming that the U.S. and Iraqi militaries have reached a tentative agreement to keep American combat troops in the Baghdad slum of Sadr City past the deadline. Officials are also saying that this base is one of 14 bases in Iraq, folks. Imagine if the French had 14 bases in the United States that they're hoping to keep open past the deadline. The change hardly comes as a tremendous surprise, as U.S. officials have presented a myriad of different official stories about the deadline. Just 2 days before General Odierno's promise, officials were saying it, quote, remains to be seen. There is already talk of U.S. reclassifying combat troops as, quote, trainers, unquote, to keep them in cities past the date. And they've also redefined the borders of cities to skirt the requirement. Even with these loopholes, it seems the temptation to ignore the requirement outright was too great. This, of course, is Fuhrer Obama's activity we're talking about. We're not talking about the evil Bush-Cheney regime. We're not talking about that nasty Rumsfeld or the vicious Condoleezza Rice. We're talking about Hillary Clinton, and we're talking about Obama, and we're talking about Nancy Pelosi, and all these political folks who are now political war criminals, really they have to be called because of what they're doing, that are now in Congress mandating the murder of more tens of thousands of Iraqis, and of course along the way, some of the troops that are killing them are going to be shot dead or commit suicide too. I really have a lot of trouble playing these guys and these men and women being a Memorial Day heroes. I'll go for patsies, you know. I'll go for people who should not be cheated out of their vets' benefits. But I'm sure as hell not going to go for heroes who sacrifice themselves for our country. Sorry, that one doesn't go. And it is used to conceal ongoing criminal activity by those who send them over there to do this murderous nonsense. It's actually not nonsense. I guess it's quite profitable. Otherwise, why would they send them? How many times will Guantanamo kill? Here's another story by Mozam Beg, June 4th, 2009. From Allah we come, and to him is the return. How many times will we have to utter these Quranic words of condolence for prisoners? I myself am not a follower of the Quran, the Bible, the Ten Commandments, or Mother Goose, for that matter. I don't follow any of these books, and I'm not recommending anyone do this. But, of course, some people take these things very seriously, and you have the ongoing religious wars. You know, we saw what that did in the 15th and 16th centuries. You get to see it again now in the 21st century. And I'm not just talking about, it's actually more of a corporate wars and having to do with wealth and nationalism than having to do with religion. It's being kind of twisted, I think, in that way. But in any case, here again is Mozam Beg talking about Guantanamo. How many times will we have to utter these Quranic words of condolence for prisoners who die after being incarcerated without charge or trial for years on end? It began with the deaths of Mane al-Otabe, Yasser el-Zarani from Saudi Arabia, and Ali Abdullah Ahmed al-Salami from Yemen in June 2006. This, of course, was in Guantanamo. That was followed by the deaths of Abdul Rahman al-Amri from Saudi Arabia in May 2007, followed by Abdul Razak from Afghanistan in 2008. All but the latter are said to have committed suicide. That version of events is highly contested by their families and former prisoners who knew them. A few weeks ago, the alleged suicide of Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi in a Libyan desert prison elicited a similar response. This week, it was the turn of Muhammad Ahmad Abdallah Saleh, one of the 100 or so Yemenis, the single largest group still held at Guantanamo Bay. He had survived the horrific Kala-i-Jangi massacre carried out by the Afghan Northern Alliance and the U.S. military in December 2001. You remember the Great Patriotic War, where we moved in to decimate the Afghani population, to throw out the evil Taliban, right? That was the ones that we were negotiating with the year before, and the ones who had agreed to stop the heroin trade. Not that I'm a big fan of either continuing or stopping the heroin trade, but they love to change around these heroes and villains. The masks shift back and forth depending upon the preferences and conveniences of the people in power. From there, he was moved to Cherburgham Prison, where British former Guantanamo prisoner Shafiq Rasool saw him. We're talking about Muhammad Ahmad Abdallah Saleh, apparently another guy who died this week in Guantanamo. Quote, he was a very quiet, thoughtful, and uncomplaining person. He'd been through unimaginable hardship, but other than looking very thin and weak, you wouldn't have known it. He was still very emaciated and weak-looking by the time I met him in the U.S.-occupied detention center at Kandahar Airport in January 2002. He described to me the terrifying events at Kala-i-Jangi, which were almost beyond belief. To have seen him being held with us in that place, knowing that he spent another 8 years in a tiny cage, is still difficult to comprehend. I didn't see him in Guantanamo, but former British prisoner Omar Degayas did. Quote, he, Mohammed, was a well-known brother. He was noted for being patient, calm, and steadfast, and I believe certainly not the sort to commit suicide. That he had survived the carnage of Kala-i-Jangi and the ensuing barbaric detention at the hands of the Northern Alliance in Cherburgham and then in Kandahar, all those are Afghani cities, and 7 years of Guantanamo, 7 years, 7 years, I repeat, of Guantanamo, only to die in a cell the very year Obama has promised to close Guantanamo, makes no sense. Muhammad was among the first people to arrive in the notorious Camp X-Ray. He is the sixth prisoner that Guantanamo has killed. Undoubtedly, there will be people saying he deserved what he got, that we all should have died like that and worse. That anyone in Guantanamo is there for a justified reason, and consequently people who die there have only themselves to blame. What such people don't realize is that whether you like it or agree with it or not, many people on the other side of the world will regard Muhammad as a shaheed, a martyr witness. They believe that he will be rewarded abundantly in the hereafter for every hardship that befell him and every wound and humiliation he suffered and every second of his torturous detention without trial. I learned this when I called the father of one of the men who died in Guantanamo in 2006. The man was a retired general in the Saudi army. When I told him I was calling with condolences for the death of his son, he replied, "My brother, we don't need condolences. My son is a martyr." I wonder if that is what they intended when they started so many years ago to detain people in Guantanamo Bay, the world's most infamous prison. Only three people have been released since Obama came into office. Muhammad is one of them. So, and then here is a story called The Torture Memos. Torture has been routine practice from the early days of the Republic. This is by the world-famous linguistics and political thinker Noam Chomsky, which probably everybody who listens to this station has heard about, or many of you have. The torture memos released by the White House in April elicited shock, indignation, and surprise. The shock and indignation are understandable, particularly the testimony in the Senate Armed Services Committee report on the Cheney-Rumsfeld desperation to find links between Iraq and al-Qaeda, links that were later concocted as justification for the invasion. Facts irrelevant. Former Army psychiatrist Major Charles Burney testified that, quote, a large part of the time we were focused on trying to establish a link between al-Qaeda and Iraq. The more frustrated people got in not being able to establish this link, there was more and more pressure to resort to measures that might produce more immediate results. That is, torture. The McClatchy Press reported that a former senior intelligence official familiar with the interrogation issue added that the Bush administration applied relentless pressure on interrogators to use harsh methods on detainees in order to find evidence of cooperation between al-Qaeda and the late Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein's regime. Cheney and Rumsfeld demanded that the interrogators find evidence of al-Qaeda-Iraq collaboration. There was constant pressure on the intelligence agencies and the interrogators to do whatever it took to get that information out of the detainees, especially the few high-value ones we had. And when people kept coming up empty, They were told by Cheney and Rumsfeld's people to push harder. These were the most significant revelations, barely reported. While such testimony about the viciousness and deceit of the administration should indeed be shocking, the surprise at the general picture revealed is nonetheless surprising. A narrow reason is that even without inquiry, it was reasonable to suppose that Guantanamo was a torture chamber. Why else send prisoners where they would be beyond the reach of the law? Incidentally, a place that Washington is using in violation of a treaty that was forced on Cuba at the point of a gun. Security reasons are alleged, but they are hard to take seriously. The same expectations held for secret prisons and rendition and were fulfilled. The broader reason is that torture has been routine. Routine practice from the early days of the conquest of the national territory and then beyond as the imperial ventures of the infant empire, as George Washington called the new republic, extended to the Philippines, Haiti, and elsewhere. Furthermore, torture is the least of the many crimes of aggression, terror, subversion, and economic strangulation that have darkened U.S. history, much as in the case of other great powers. Accordingly, it is surprising to see the reactions even by some of the most eloquent and forthright critics of Bush malfeasance, for example, that we used to be a nation of moral ideals, and never before Bush have our leaders been so utterly betrayed everything our nation stands for, as Paul Krugman said. To say the least, this common view reflects a rather slanted version of history. Occasionally, the conflict between what we stand for and what we do has been forthrightly addressed. One distinguished scholar who undertook the task is Hans Morgenthau, a founder of realist international relations theory. In a classic study written in the glow of Camelot, back in the Kennedy years, Morgenthau developed the standard view that the U.S. has a transcendent purpose, establishing peace and freedom at home and indeed everywhere, since, quote, the arena with which the United States must defend and promote its purpose has become worldwide. But, as a scrupulous scholar, he recognized that the historical record is radically inconsistent with the so-called transparent purpose of America. We should not, however, be misled by that discrepancy, Morgenthau advises. In his words, we should not confound the abuse of reality with reality itself. Reality is the unachieved national purpose revealed by the evidence of history as our minds reflect it. What actually happened is merely the abuse of reality. To confound abuse of reality with reality is to commit the error of atheism, which denies the validity of religion on similar grounds. An apt comparison. The release of the torture memos led others to recognize the problem. If you didn't follow that, keep listening. You'll probably follow the rest of this. In the New York Times, columnist Roger Cohen reviewed a book by British journalist Jeffrey Hodgson, who concludes that U.S. is just one great but imperfect country among others. Cohen agrees that the evidence supports Hodgson's judgment, but regards it as fundamentally mistaken. The reason is Hodgson's failure to understand that America was born as an idea, and so it has to carry that idea forward. The American idea is revealed by America's birth as a city on a hill, an inspirational notion that resides deep in the American psyche, and by the distinctive spirit of American individualism and enterprise demonstrated in the Western expansion. Hodgson's error is that he is keeping to the distortions of the American idea in recent decades, the abuse of reality in recent years. Of course, Noam Chomsky, who I'm reading from, is actually rather, he's looking at this rather ironically. Let us then turn to reality itself, the idea of America from its earliest days. The inspirational phrase, city on a hill, was coined by John Winthrop in 1630, borrowing from the Gospels and outlining the glorious future of a new nation ordained by God. One year earlier, his Massachusetts Bay Colony established its great seal. It depicts an Indian with a scroll coming out of his mouth. On it are the words, come over and help us. The British colonists were thus benevolent humanists, responding to the pleas of the miserable natives to be rescued from their bitter pagan fate. The Great Seal is a graphic representation of the idea of America from its birth. It should be exhumed from the depths of the psyche and displayed on the walls of every classroom. It should certainly appear in the background of all the Kim Il-sung-style worship of the savage murderer and torturer Ronald Reagan, who blissfully described himself as a leader of a shining city on a hill while orchestrating ghastly crimes and leaving a hideous legacy. This early proclamation of humanitarian intervention, to use the currently fashionable phrase, turned out to be very much like its successors, facts that were not obscure to the agents. The first Secretary of War, General Henry Knox, uttered or described the utter extirpation of all the Indians in the most populous parts of the Union by means more destructive to the Indian natives than the conduct of the conquerors of Mexico and Peru. Long after his own significant contributions to the process were passed, John Quincy Adams deplored the fate of, quote, that hapless race of Native Americans which we are exterminating with such merciless and perfidious cruelty among the heinous sins of this nation for which I believe God will one day bring it to judgment. The merciless and perfidious cruelty continued until the West was won. Instead of God's judgment, the heinous sins being bring only praise for the fulfillment of the American idea, and then he quotes a couple of historians. There was, to be sure, a more convenient and conventional version expressed, for example, by Supreme Court Justice Joseph Story, who mused that the wisdom of Providence caused the natives to disappear like the withered leaves of autumn, even though the colonists had constantly respected them. Those Indians just can't seem to take it. They're just disappearing on us. The conquest and settling of the West showed indeed individualism and enterprise. Settler colonialist enterprises, the cruelest form of imperialism, commonly do. The outcome was hailed by the respected and influential Senator Henry Cabot Lodge in 1898. Calling for intervention in Cuba, Lodge lauded our record of conquest, colonization, and territorial expansion, unequaled by any people in the 19th century, and urged that it is not to be curbed now, as the Cubans, too, are pleading with us to come over and help them. Their plea was answered. The U.S. sent troops, thereby preventing Cuba's liberation from Spain and turning it into a virtual colony, as it remained until 1959. The American idea is illustrated further by a remarkable campaign, initiated virtually at once to restore Cuba to its proper place, economic warfare with the clearly articulated aim of punishing the population so that they would overthrow the disobedient government. Invasion, the dedication of the Kennedy brothers to bring the terrors of the earth to Cuba, the phrase of historian Arthur Schlesinger in his biography of Robert Kennedy, who took the task as one of his highest priorities, and other crimes continuing to the present in defiance of virtually unanimous world opinion. There are, to be sure, critics who hold that our efforts to bring democracy to Cuba have failed, so we should turn to other ways to come over and help them. How do these critics know this goal was to bring democracy? There is evidence. Our leaders proclaim it. There is also counter-evidence, the declassified internal record, but that can be dismissed as just the abuse of history. American imperialism is often traced to the takeover of Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Hawaii in 1898. But that is to succumb to what the historian of imperialism Bernard Porter calls the saltwater fallacy, the idea that conquest only becomes imperialism when it crosses salt water. Thus, if the Mississippi had resembled the Irish Sea, Western expansion would have been imperialism. From Washington to Lodge, those engaged in enterprise had a clearer grasp. After the success of, quote, humanitarian intervention in Cuba in 1898, the next step in the mission assigned by Providence was to confer the blessings of liberty and civilization upon all the rescued peoples of the Philippines. In the words of the platform of Lodge's Republican Party, at least those who survived the murderous onslaught and large-scale torture and other atrocities that accompanied it. These fortunate souls were left at the mercies of the U.S.-established Philippine constabulary within a newly devised model of colonial domination, relying on... I don't want to lose my place here. Security forces trained and equipped for sophisticated modes of surveillance, intimidation, and violence. Similar models were adopted in many other areas where the U.S. imposed brutal national guards and other client forces with consequences that should be well known. In the past 60 years, victims worldwide have endured the CIA's torture paradigm, developed at a cost reaching $1 billion annually, according to historian Alfred McCoy, who shows that the methods surfaced with little change in Abu Ghraib. There is no hyperbole when Jennifer Harbury entitles her penetrating study of the U.S. torture record, Truth, Torture, and the American Way. It is highly misleading, to say the least, when investigators of the Bush gang's descent into the sewer lament that in waging war against terrorism, America has lost its way. Torture innovations and paradigms. Actually, this is a long article by Noam Chomsky. I'm going to recommend folks look into it. It's about the history of the U.S. use of torture and tries to illuminate the fact that what the U.S. has been doing under the Bush administration is by no means exceptional. It's just rather more blatant. And again, if you want to check out this article, go to, let's see here. It's on the ZSpace page. So Google for Noam Chomsky, C-H-O-M-S-K-Y, and the name of the article is The Torture Memos. Have I put you to sleep yet, Jess?
Not at all. It's actually all very interesting to me.
Okay, well, we may have to torture you a little later to make sure you're telling the truth. All right, I want to remind you that you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. That's the what we're streaming at. And I'm going to play some interviews from the street, and we're going to actually stop and comment on them when either of us feels inclined to comment. And that includes you out there, so if you want to call in, 427-3772, 427-3772 is the number. Do it.
We're out here on the streets on Thursday evening. It's about 8:30 at night on May 28th. We're talking with
Logan
and
Heather.
So what's happening, you two? Here we are at Al Fresco's. Thanks for all your support. It says the big kiosk. Are you getting supported by the community here locally?
Oh, I'm getting very supported by the community.
Really? And how is that support manifesting itself?
All sorts of ways. I can't quite exactly count right now, but apparently, things just fall from the sky.
You were telling me you were getting hassled by the fuzz.
Yes, hassled by the fuzz. Now, 15 minutes ago, we were in a spot where apparently you're not allowed to loiter. And then,
what's this? Where were you told not to loiter?
In the New Leaf parking lot during business hours. Quite a silly proposition, too.
It was the private security guard or a police officer?
It was the police officer.
Did he say that he was called by the New Leaf management, or did they just take it upon himself?
It appears to be he took it upon himself, but that's...
Name of the police officer?
I didn't gather that one up. I was out of the scene before anything happened.
How many of you were moved on?
There's four of us moved on, one held back, and released.
Oh, so he was held for some suspected of a criminal behavior?
Well, he just needed some, some clarification of the rules of the 215 code and such.
Oh, marijuana smoking.
Yeah.
Did he have his medical car?
It was at home. And I suggested to them finding a system in which they could look up whether or not they had the card.
What did the officer say? That if he had his card, it would be legal for him to smoke in the New Leaf parking lot?
No, it's not a publicly accepted thing. It's pretty much, I think you have to be inside of a home.
Well, you have to be 1,000 feet from a school, park, or public facility, some such thing, which is hard to find in Santa Cruz.
Yeah,
1,000 feet is like 4 blocks or something. I mean, I'm not quite sure actually how much, but it's just a considerable distance. So.
Yes, but...
It's an outrageous requirement, but there you have it. So no other encounters, just this one you mentioned?
Yeah, that's been the current day, just grapefruit falling from the sky.
Have you been to Jack's lately?
Jack's? I'm not.
The burger joint a block away from here, that way?
I've not been to Jack's.
I just wondered, because they've made a deal with homeless people that they would, if you pay food, there was accusations of discrimination. Now apparently they are saying that if you're homeless, you can come, and you pay your bill, they're not going to discriminate against you just because you're homeless.
Oh, that seems to be the rule in every store that I've encountered. I click you to buy something and then do it.
We've been talking with...
Can you repeat that?
Your name again is...
Logan.
Thank you, Logan. Well, it's about 9:45. Going into the courthouse today on Friday the 29th to the hearing. The reason that I preface this whole discussion, I'm now in the corridors of the court outside Department 1, although it's Department 4 that is going to be the place where this issue is going to be resolved. The issue of sleeping downtown on a proposed injunction, and Attorney Gettleman will be handling that. Present we have Steve Argue, Bernard Klitzner, James Ney, who's here on another case, and...
Josh Ney.
The Nays are here, neighing away, as usual. Naysayers are the worst kind. Your case involves...
My son, James Jr.,
who
is actually on a parole violation
for... Well, he was in parole for bad check. He was in prison. He got paroled, and his parole officer says that, well, he wrote the check in, he cashed the check in San Jose, so he has to live in San Jose now. So she says, rather than get to come home, have a job, have a house, he must live in a homeless shelter in San Jose. And because he came home, they arrested him.
Well, you know, you don't allow the homeless to go home. That would ruin the whole category.
Absolutely.
I hope you can sympathize.
You got to put it correctly. What it is the parole officer in San Jose doesn't want to lose the money they're getting paid for him there. If they transfer him to Santa Cruz, then Santa Cruz will get the parole money.
Well, what don't you want? So in other words, you're actually rooting for Santa Cruz to get the parole money.
No, I don't think anybody should get any money for it, but I do want my son to come home, yes.
Fair enough. We've been talking with
James Day,
the infamous, one of the original chalk criminals of Santa Cruz.
One of the idiots that loved chalking on the sidewalk.
Did you chalk on the sidewalk?
The one that I was arrested for, the last was I had written in front of the old downtown host's office, I had written, Geneva Convention says sleep deprivation is torture. And he arrested me for writing that.
And who was that who arrested
you? Oh, gosh, I don't remember his name.
Oh, that's 10 years ago or more.
Yeah, you know, the big square-jawed guy.
Officer Pollock?
Pollock, wasn't it? No, it wasn't Pollock.
Not sure. But in any case, I actually ran into Officer Pollock the other day.
That was
didn't hurt him at all.
That was an interesting one, too, because remember when he took me to jail, they wouldn't even accept me because you couldn't be arrested for chalking at that time.
You know, that must be doubly humiliating, first to be arrested and then to be refused entrance to the jail. I mean, it's just, you know, how low you are.
Of such a low life.
So what's up, Jonathan? I'll direct him in.
When they come in, would you just tell them we're getting ready to get started?
And actually, this is all preparatory to the last Friday's injunction hearing where, of course, it turned out that the judge, I don't know if we could call it quite a done deal. It seemed pretty much of a done deal to me. Judge Paul Burdick ruled in favor of the city attorney's absurd claim that somehow it's legal to criminalize sleeping in Santa Cruz in the downtown area, even though it's illegal all over the city. And that somehow there's no necessity to sleep, or that even if there isn't adequate shelter for everybody there, that he should have tried to get into shelter, or they should make these token attempts that are in the summer completely useless. You aren't going to get into shelter in the summer unless you are gravely disabled, or unless you happen to get on a waiting list and get through the program that it's in, because there's shelter for less than, I actually think it's probably less than 20 people, but it might be less than 60 people. It's a little confusing because one of the shelters is has a waiting list and you have to actually get on it. But the actual emergency walk-in shelter for you, Jess, for example, tonight in the studio with me, in case you've forgotten, is that homeless waif, once a productive member of society, of a nurse, now fleeing from authorities and obviously wretched beyond belief, poor Jess. So, Jess, say hello to your many fans out there. Better turn up your mic there.
Hi.
There you go. Of course, I'm just kidding around. But, in fact, this is, again, what happened right before the injunction hearing. And you're going to be hearing some more discussion of what happened afterward. We weren't able to record it, although I did get a recording today, the audio recording of the Metro trial, my trial for trespass, for daring to refuse to leave the Metro bus property, which was essentially the entranceway to the Metro, when I was interviewing two homeless guys and a security guard told me to leave. And I said, no, I'm not going to leave. It's a public place. So we'll see. We don't know what the verdict is on that yet, but we do have an audio of the trial. I'm going to actually see if it'll download, and we may be playing that on Sunday. Anyway, here is the last Friday, the 29th, I believe, and the discussions around the injunction granted against Ana Richardson and Miguel de Leon, which are to some extent part of the motivation for our protest day after tomorrow in front of Bunny Shoes downtown at 1 o'clock, which is a couple of doors down from the Palomar Hotel, for those of you who don't know where that is, and which is a couple doors down from the Coffee Roasting Company, if you don't know where the Palomar Hotel is. Again, phone lines here, 427-3772. Any comments, Jess?
Nothing that I can think of right now. You know, I've been talking a lot today. I think right now I'm going to listen to you.
All right, then. Fair enough.
Okay, I will. Are you covering this, the injunction? Or?
No.
Okay. Just talking to the district attorney. Also present here are Steve Argue and Bernard Klitzner, who are activists as well, who have been involved in fighting the sleeping ban and engaging in homeless rights struggles. I'll tell them.
Mark Risco?
Yeah. I think Mark came out, actually, didn't he?
Outside the courtroom, way outside the courtroom, in the courtyard after the decision by the judge to uphold the injunction, which essentially covers a downtown area.
Are you fucking kidding me?
So we're out here after this decision by Judge Burdick. The courtroom had about 20 people in it, half of them sort of the merchant squad that was supporting this. Susan Barrasoni was the city attorney. Gettleman and Briscoe were the two other attorneys. But more important, we have people who came supporters. Who wants to talk first? Gabe?
A small point is that I understand that the city of Santa Cruz, we all function, it mainly functions off tourism. So I think it's completely legitimate that there needs to be, I think there's a compromise that could be reached to make it so that tourists aren't offended and this and that. But if they wanted to have a nice tourist season, a nice peaceful tourist season, which is what I think the majority of us homeless people want too, is to not make a fuss, stay out of everybody's
way. Remember, we're talking about the, hold it, Gabe, we're talking about the trial. I'm interested in comments about the trial.
You have to let me get.
Yeah, but I mean, you've been doing the majority of the talking aside from me. I'm doing all the talking.
I do have a tendency to interrupt. My apologies.
But nonetheless,
I was just going to say, and so if they wanted a nice tourist season by doing this, I think they've ruined all chances of having a nice tourist season because we'll have to respond to it by protesting and or whatnot every day on the avenue, and that's probably not going to be helpful for tourism, which is supposedly the whole reason that this went on, for the benefit of the downtown and the merchants. So they're really just fighting against themselves. So that's my point. I'm sorry.
No. I'm sorry if I interrupted you. I apologize for interrupting.
I apologize.
I apologize more than you.
I interrupt.
All right. Let's get into it. Anyone else have some thoughts,
yeah.
Bernard?
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
Good. Thank you.
Bernard Klitzner.
Thank you. What I observed today in the courtroom is just a question of hypocrisy within the injunction. The judge says, well, you know, you cannot sleep, you know, within a small, narrow framework of the downtown, but yet he said to go ahead and sleep, you know, outside of the downtown. Well, both of them, you know, are illegal. I think that the downtown interests, you know, in this city have a lot more power than, let's say, commercial interests outside the main downtown area. That's my only logical thing that I can think of why that decision was made.
Thank you, Bernard.
Yeah, something to say.
Steve first. Go ahead,
Steve. And then
So,
okay.
So tomorrow at Sub Rosa,
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
Okay.
All right.
This was an absurdity. The injunction was granted based on a whole number of arguments the judge himself made, which included a whole number of things that weren't true about the sleeping ban.
Such as
the judge was pointing out, well, the defendants could go sleep up in the Poganip and other places where it's also illegal. So there were a lot of absurdities in the arguments that the judge made basically argued as the prosecutor up on the bench and filed the injunction, and went against what he had said earlier in court, where he said these people sleeping from 11 to between 11 and 6 really aren't causing any problems for the merchants downtown. He switched his position on that. And basically what we've got in this town is we've got the judges right in the back pocket of the merchants along with the city council, police, everything, a whole system where there really is no justice. There's no justice for homeless people. There's no justice for people who come up against this system. And that's why there needs to be more action, more people speaking out. There's talk about doing some protest on this and really getting in the faces of the merchants who are really the cause of this. Bonnie Shoes was one of the merchants who...
Bonnie Shoes?
Who filed one of the complaints. And that's a good place to protest. To protest downtown. They don't want homeless people around. We should get a whole bunch of homeless people around and other people who supporting them.
Right on. Do you have time to do any of this, Steve, yourself?
I will in a week. I've got a very busy schedule for the next week, but
after that
I can do some things.
It'll be vacation in Santa Cruz. Donna, anything you want to say? I'm sorry, Dave, you're next.
Okay, for the historian Rob Norris. I've been going through this life learning education and trying to figure out why Warsaw existed in Germany and why all these business owners in Santa Cruz aren't getting it, because Warsaw, there were Jews in the street and they were
Warsaw
dying
ghetto.
And the ghetto,
right.
And the ghetto is part of a big city just like Santa Cruz, and when they start partitioning, building walls, straining people down the street, when we all stand there and look one day and realize the men in uniform and the judges, and they're giving orders to scoop us up and throw us in trucks. The people of Santa Cruz, they're the ones I want to talk to and let them know. Warsaw, the movie show, S-H-O-A.
But remember,
need to watch it. Treblinka was a reality, and Warsaw, and also the Gestapo.
Thank you, Dave. John, any comments?
It's important to stand alone and follow through with what you believe is right. That's very important. And to stick with other people in the community, because the will of the people is the only thing we have that can change unjust laws.
Don, any comments about your own case you want to make?
Not right now.
Okay. Dave, you just want to say something else, or are you good?
I'm just a little bit perturbed at this system.
As
it's
you
really
should be.
Third Reichish, and I don't like it, and they better wake up and smell the coffee, because, hey, we're running out, and then the room's filling up with homeless people, and they're going to start having to look the other way at these things pretty soon, because, hey, we're not Jews in the streets, we're people in the streets.
Thanks. So some of us are Jewish people in the streets, and that's another matter.
Yeah.
We're talking out here with the activist Steve Argue, who's, who knows, maybe it'll be, if we get something going here. He's suggesting that the best road to follow in protest, Steve, is to set up some maybe public information about what's going on for the tourists, to let them know what the businesses that they're patronizing are supporting in terms of how they regard or don't regard the civil rights of poor people in Santa Cruz. Or perhaps more succinctly put, we are the public, they are the nuisance.
Indeed.
And the significance of that is that the reason for the injunction was supposedly that Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon were a, quote, public nuisance. But, as I say, I think we are the public, and of course the city, the police, and the merchants, in terms of their attempts to usurp public space, are the nuisance.
I think setting up a information table, a soapbox for speakers, maybe like Robert gets Joel Schultz's delicious soup, pass some of that out, and have like an informational protest where we can hand out flyers to people passing by, we can have speakers and hang out and... they don't want to see homeless people, they don't want to see protesters, but they want to do all these nasty things to homeless people. Well, let's be more visible. Let's get in their faces when they do things like they pulled today in court.
Hear, hear. So we have a vicious hemp reefer madness guy. Have you been slaying people under the influence of marijuana?
No, not today, anyways.
I see. But you're here because of a marijuana church.
Yes, sir.
What is your name, sir?
Jeremiah.
And Jeremiah, what, you actually are taking a marijuana case to trial? This is unheard of. You're supposed to plead out, lick the judge's boots, and get diversion. What is your deal, man?
Well, I usually do. I usually, when I get caught dirty-handedly smoking pot, I don't mind taking the ticket.
Right.
This time here, I was actually sober, totally sober, and they harassed me while I was doing my art. And
your art being?
Playing music at the time. I was playing guitar, six string.
Where was this?
Down on Pacific Avenue.
And when was this?
About 6:40. I don't know the date, exactly the date. It's in the paperwork. I don't think I got it.
And was it like this year or last year?
I believe it was this year, I believe. I think it was this year.
And so what happened in that instance? I mean, how did they come?
They started off by saying that I was playing music in a wrong area, and they were going to cite me for a ticket for littering.
For littering, not for being in the wrong area.
For littering. So I was being very cooperative, you know, like I am, always am.
Had you littered? Let's be honest now.
Well, I was smoking a cigarette, and out of the corner of my eye, I seen him, and I was putting away the guitar case, and I butted my cigarette butt with like a little ashtray, you know what I mean, like a little, I had like two or three butts out from my performance. I butted one out, and...
Got a spare cigarette for this guy? I will kick down a little for tobacco. We have here the criminal, the injunctive criminals. Now, how do you feel about the court proceedings there? Well, let me start with you.
You're still in the middle of...
And before we go any further, you just heard an interesting tale. Could be apocryphal, who knows, but maybe true. Not only did you get a ticket for putting out a cigarette butt on the sidewalk, but you get a ticket for...
I was just told by somebody that they were driving in their car and they ashed out the window. They did not throw their cigarette butt out the window. They just put their ash out the window, and they actually received a ticket for that, which I thought was very interesting because I always ash out the window when I smoke. Unfortunately, I'm still smoking cigarettes, but I always ash out the window. I put my cigarette butts in my car when I'm done, but I never knew you could get a ticket for ashing out a window before.
Oh,
so I thought that was very interesting.
Every day,
yes,
don't you?
Yes.
Plus his second court case.
No, he's also here on a second charge. But Anna Richardson, you were found...
It's also illegal to sleep while running.
Sleeping while running. Well, that's difficult as well as illegal, I would imagine. Boy, I'm just sputtering away here. What did you think of the particular injunction hearing? I know you got in a bit late there, Anna. The judge was annoyed that you came 5 minutes late, I think, McGill.
One of them might have been...
And then I didn't know where he was, so...
You were held up at the metal detector because you had some nuclear weapons with you, Brent?
Yeah, and somebody stole my guitar last night, so I was kind of,
unhappy about that.
And trying to figure out what to do with my drum and stuff so that I don't lose that as well.
And what was your solution? How did you get your stuff? You left it here?
Yep, and I
survived.
I prayed to God.
Well, I guess Michael was here, a musical Mike, or he was... Yeah, he's the musical Mike is the guy who plays in the. We're in the courtyard here of the breezeway between the courthouse and the county building.
Show how deeply they work for Lucifer.
So Anna, what did you think of this injunction hearing? What was your any strong reactions at any point? What are you intending now to follow the verdict of the judge and not sleep anymore?
Well, you know, if Miguel happens to pass out like he does sometimes, like without being able to help it, I'll just have to go more caveman than I am now and throw him over my shoulder.
So you're how tall are you?
I don't know. I forget.
Yeah, how much do you weigh?
The cops have that information.
All right, we'll try to get back to you. Maybe we can talk to a local officer. So no other comments about the trial?
And actually, Anna is, 4'11", 5 feet, and Miguel is, 5'10", 5'11", maybe... In other words, it might be a little more difficult for her to carry him around. And this business about sleep running, apparently not only were Miguel facing this injunction last Friday, he was also facing a pretrial, I think a charge of resisting arrest because when he was awakened by the officer, he just started to run, and he claimed while he was still asleep, and he ran away, and then he realized that he had run away from an officer. He came back and just lay down on the sidewalk in front of the officer, surrendering himself. But apparently that wasn't good enough. They were going to charge him now with a misdemeanor for resisting arrest, which is a favorite charge. it makes me fumble when I hear that because it's such a frequently used bogus charge. They won't charge you with any other charge, just resisting arrest, even though the underlying charge... supposedly will be the reason you are resisting arrest, or they claim you are resisting arrest, or the reason they approached you isn't really discussed. I guess they have to mention it somehow. I really haven't been to a resisting arrest trial in some time, but this was a charge that Donna Dice, the elderly woman whose arm was broken by Sergeant Lamas last May, way up in the along the coast in the Santa Cruz city limits, because she didn't want to talk to an officer, turned to get in her van. He spun her around, and either by slamming her down, he broke her arm, or kneeling on her back. He's a 220-230-pound guy. She's a little chunkier, but she's much older than Anna Richardson, and she's also disabled. She was even more disabled after this happened. Her arm got broken, and this case got delayed for a year. She finally pled out to a charge. Apparently, reportedly, I wasn't in the court when this happened, but I'm told by witnesses that, or one witness, that the DA came into the defense and said, please, please have her plead out to something. And they said, well, what do you want her to plead out to? And they said, anything. So she pled out to littering. And that was it.
She had to make up a crime?
Well, she had a cup of coffee that spilled, and she dropped the cup as the officer assaulted her and spun her around. Again, this is supposed to be an investigation of marijuana smoking, you see, which is a very serious crime and requires lots of police attention, particularly if you've got poor and homeless people who are smoking marijuana in an upscale area like on the west side in Santa Cruz, which really is the key to this whole thing, unfortunately, and the fact that it's not really going to change until we change this kind of prejudice or until we mobilize people who are facing this kind of prejudice to resist it, which is what we're trying to do on Saturday at 1 o'clock downtown in front of Bunny's Shoes. So whether you want to buy shoes, show off shoes, or throw shoes, come on down to Bunny's Shoes at 1 o'clock on Saturday and join the fun as we attempt to alert the community to the importance of ending the sleeping ban and ending this other kinds of abuses that essentially are a way of telling the homeless to get the fuck out of sight, if not out of town. That seems to be what their message is. Anyway, some more interviews from last Friday, right after the judge rubber-stamped the injunction put forward by City Attorneys Susan and John Barisoni on behalf of the much-aggrieved merchants.
She's going to go get a cigarette. It's a nicotine addiction. It's a serious matter. And we've lost our marijuana man. This is what happens when you try to do six things at once. Steve, any comments?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, we have encountered Joshua again. Joshua, so you...
Jeremiah.
I'll work on that. So you're here, on a charge of possession of marijuana. You said you were initially ticketed for littering?
Well, initially they came up to me, and I think Klein said he was trying to try to... He said he was going to write me for playing music in a wrongful area, which I was going to take the ticket, you know, on the chin. You know, just take it, like, you know, because I was kind of playing in a wrong area.
You were disturbing all kinds of people. They were screaming, shut up.
No disturbance.
You were blocking the sidewalk.
Maybe I wasn't blocking the sidewalk.
You were urinating. In other words, you weren't doing anything wrong except violating a series of ordinances designed to give the police the opportunity to move you along.
Yeah, they were just looking for something, and I guess me butting out my cigarette gave them the reason to come up and talk to me.
This was a cigarette, like a roll-your-own cigarette?
Probably was a Roly or Taylor. I'm not real sure.
Police have claimed that they do not, the Sergeant Harms said, they do not hassle people for tailor-made cigarettes because they're environmentally friendly. That's what was his claim, I believe.
Wow, I did not know this.
Or perhaps, it may not be true. It was Officer Harms or Sergeant Harms or Officer Winston. So, then what happened?
Said, like, we could search you, or, you know, like, they were trying to imply that, like, they knew that possibly I was on search cause from probation because I was in some legal trouble, that it was their lucky day that they get to search the great bullfrog, you know what I'm saying?
Were you?
Take my pot, you know?
All right.
Should be said that Bullfrog is Jeremiah's stage name. He has been singing out on the wharf, Jeremiah was a bullfrog, you know, that sort of thing, and he's... Well, that's his moniker.
Yeah, you're the man who used to be singing out on the wharf, I remember. We actually talked about this, right?
Yeah, I used to play downtown all the time.
Right, and you stopped playing since?
I will not come downtown. I come downtown for my commerce, and that's about it. I will not make my money down there. I don't play songs for children anymore. I don't feel like I'm safe going down there. I feel like I am a second-class citizen.
No, that's not because you're afraid you'll be assaulted by street people or drug dealers. Rather, it's because...
Of police harassment, of the fact that I am trying to be a closet pot smoker and not be a federal, you know, protected on their federal protected list.
So you're not a man with a medical marijuana card or letter recommendation?
But I have pretty much...
been recommended medical marijuana, but
the state said that orally.
But yeah, for certain state and certain states that didn't have medical marijuana, like the state of Michigan or the state of Florida, does not really at the time did not recognize medical marijuana. So
what
I never.
What happened today? I gotta press you because I gotta go.
We're going to a pretrial and then we're gonna go to a jury trial. I'm actually gonna fight this. Usually, normally I say fine. You guys caught me with pot. Oh well, I'll pay my ticket. You know, I got caught slipping, right?
Right.
This time here, I kind of feel like I was violated. Really do. I still feel like I'm unsafe to be walking around.
Do you have a public defender?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Jerry, I can't think of his last name.
Uh-huh. And how is it going so far? What's happened at the pretrial?
Well, we'll have pretrial on the 8th. We'll find out. We just came in today just to get everything going. It was the preliminary or whatever.
You have a call to Huff a few days before, and we'll pass on the news that you're going to be going to pretrial if you want people there.
No, that'd be fine.
Okay. And again, we've been talking with
Jeremiah.
Thank you, Jeremiah. Mr. Bullfrog Man.
Thanks, Robert.
All right. Actually, Miguel is going back to court.
Sprint. You know what I'm saying? I was in full sprint.
I understand.
Cop came, woke us up one morning and was going to issue tickets, and I thought I was having a bad dream. And you know what I'm saying? It was
Can't you get a psychologist to back you up on that?
I don't know about that, but...
What do you charge with?
Resisting arrest, because... Because
you
are... I guess that's why.
Who's your attorney?
Well, what
your
happened the average person's...
And this is, again... Miguel de Leon talking about his sleep running ticket.
I said, get up!
Gentlemen?
So John, the gentleman's defending you on this.
Mark Briscoe.
And what is the nature of the hearing today?
Resisting arrest. So we'll
in
see.
What court?
Court one.
That's a Judge Simon, right? Judge Simon?
Judge. She's fair, I think.
She? A woman?
Yes.
She's pretty, but she's not fair in my view. But nonetheless, but she's fairly pretty. That might be good.
She's been fair to me, though.
Bye, guys.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Call me up, Jonathan.
Get back in there, baby.
And we're on Pacific Avenue, about 5 to 2 on Friday, listening to Nessie and her beards. Crime is running rampant here across the street. A couple is walking a dog on the street. And this, of course, is amplified music in front of Del Williams Jewelers, shockingly enough, and in Spanish. Looking over to Del Williams, see if there is a no trespass sign in the window. And we have a new store hours, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Lots of nice displays in the window. But no sign indicating that folks are not welcome in the alcove, which has been an issue with street performers recently.
And I want to give a shout-out to Dale Williams. I'm not a jewelry fan, particularly a fan of expensive conventional jewelry, but... a woman named Brianna received a ticket, actually a bad ticket, written under the wrong ordinance, I want to say as usual, but as happens certainly with more frequency than the police like to admit. She was apparently put through some serious emotional anguish. She told them that Del Williams had allowed her to play in this little alcove, and there's a kind of a whole legal difference between playing on private property along the border of a building or in their little alcoves where they kind of the ingresses where they're, you can go, let's say if it's raining and stand there. No, you can't. That's trespass if they have something posted. Well, Deliums, apparently, according to the what she said and what the police officer apparently said was that she was going to get a trespass citation, even though on a trespass citation you're supposed to be asked to leave before you are given the citation, and she wasn't. And also, I think he screwed up further by giving her a ticket for being within 14 feet of a building, when in fact she was within minus 3 feet of the building. She was in the recessed area. She wasn't on public property, and that ordinance, we actually have talked about this on the air. But in response, the whole point here is that she went back to Dale Williams, Brianna did, and asked for a letter to the court indicating it was okay for her to be playing there because she had thought that was the case, and they gave it to her. And they also removed the no trespassing sign. Dale Williams is not known in the history of Santa Cruz for its kindness toward homeless people. However, in this case, I want to really commend them for acting appropriately and seeming to adopt a somewhat more enlightened policy. So thank you, Dale Williams.
Man,
stand in front of the famous Van der Hoof pendulum. We have the words on the sidewalk, push the pendulum. But no one is pushing the pendulum. Why not? Can't? I don't know the meaning of can't. Now, come on now. Push the pendulum in front of...
And that is where I actually, seeing these cowardly pedestrians refusing to push the pendulum, I took the bull by the horns, stepped over the forbidden fence, and yes, yes, I did it. I pushed the pendulum. This is, of course, the large brown pendulum sculpture that is meant to be pushed, according to the architect, I believe. At least I heard that secondhand, in front of Rosie McCann's and Vita downtown. Not terribly far from Bunny's Shoes, where we're going to be protesting tomorrow at 1 o'clock. For those of you who are getting, you know, maybe have not quite gotten the message that I keep repeating time after time, not tomorrow, actually, on Saturday at 1 o'clock downtown. So come join us if you'd like. Again, the point is to restore homeless people basic civil rights, the most elementary of which is the right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere. This is going to sound like some sort of advertising jingle, but somewhere.
Trading company. And here we have a bass viol on the sidewalk in front of a number of stringed instruments in front of Borders. Your instruments?
Say what?
Your instruments? Are you playing them or just displaying?
We broke the string, so we're getting
some. Oh, bummer. Well, let me ask you.
Are pleased in the area.
For free radio, what, do you have a name with your band?
Yeah, the Jugtown Pirates.
And how have the Pirates been faring in the light of the police surveillance?
We don't know. This is the first time that we've busked down here. We usually busk up in San Francisco at the Ferry Building, the cable car turnarounds, and at the BART.
Welcome to Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
You're under arrest. No, no, just kidding. They'll probably
you
leave you
there for a second, man. I almost believe you.
Well, I hope you're. I hope I'm wrong. Depends on their mood at the moment.
You'd make a great undercover cop, man.
Well,
no
thank
one would
you.
Ever believe it.
Little did I know. So, what's your name?
My name is Zach.
And Zach, how long have you been busking with the...
We've been doing it through the winter, probably about 7-8 months now.
And how many people are involved in the band?
We got three of us, Toby, Mendelssohn, and I.
And what kind of instruments do you play?
I play the upright bass, and then Mendelssohn here plays the mandolin, and Tobias Sanchez-Mon plays the guitar.
Well, it sounds like it's pretty melodious.
Yeah, absolutely. We the harmonies are what get us paid out on the street, because that really separates us from everybody else. It really rings out, and it's very loud and easy for people to relate to.
In San Francisco, you play usually at particular points at the wharf? Or where do you...
We play at the High Street Cable Car Turnaround, the Powell Street BART station, and the Ferry Building for the Saturday's Farmer's Market. And then we play on Haight Street. Wherever the cops let us play, they usually kick us out and make us move all over the place. But
What? And a residence at Mojitos.
Oh, and we play every Monday at Mojitos, which is in North Beach. Every Monday we got a bluegrass meltdown.
Your last interaction with the police was?
Say what? Yesterday.
And we're talking with?
Mendelssohn.
Go ahead, Mendelssohn.
Actually, it wasn't there.
Yeah, well, you know, all the cops in North Beach come to all our gigs. They really dig us. They're all into our sound, so we can pretty much sell drugs and, you know, do whatever we want around town, because all the police are corrupt and they're on the
Shocking indictment of the SFPD.
They're all on the take, but we got mad love for them, and they love us. It's a win-win. It's a symbiotic relationship between the Jugtown Pirates and the San Francisco Police Department.
Have you ever gotten a citation from the SFPD?
Not the ones in North Beach, but all the other ones. They'll pull you over. They're mean.
And
the further away you get away from North Beach, the meaner the cops get. And then when you cross the bridge, the cops get even meaner.
So what do you do? When was the last time you got a citation?
Well, we got a song, actually, that we sing called Cops.
Hit it. Can we do it a cappella?
Like I'll sing it. It goes, I can't help it, alone. I'm scared of cops. And when I see one, my heart just drops. I hope that I'm not carrying anything or driving too fast. Have I been drinking? Because I can't help it, alone. I'm scared of cops. And when I see one, my heart just drops. I hope that I'm not carrying anything or driving too fast. And then there's a verse. You want to hear it? The other night after dinner, leaving an Irish bar, made a ride on Geary Street, and there was a cop car. 8 drinks deep, I screamed, I think I'm going to jail. Stepped outside the vehicle. Oh, shit is when I fail. And he gave me all these tests, and I passed them in just one try. Because if I have to sleep in jail tonight, I will just cry. Then he went to the trunk, and he got a breathalyzer, reflecting back to when I drank tequila and Budweiser. visor, I flew two times deep and knew it was my fate. 0.076. Thank God it was an 8. And he sent me on my way into a taxi into the night. It's just another reason why cops give me so much fright, cause I can't help it alone. I'm scared of cops, and when I see one, my heart just drops. I hope that I'm not carrying anything or driving too fast.
And lyrics by
Zach Bruff.
As well as being sung by
Zach Bruff.
Thank you, Zach.
Jugtown Pirates. That's our one of our best songs on the album. We haven't cut it yet. But it will be on the album.
Well, I hope to hear you. Are you part of this gang or just passing by?
These are two of our beautiful friends.
Groupies? Are you groupies here?
I'm part of the gang. I live on their school bus with them.
I'm a groupie.
All right, now, are you a groupie or are you a gropey? Let's be.
No, we're the gropey. She's the groupie.
Very well. We're going to get into this. Luckily, this is radio and not television. Yeah, kind of shocking here.
Shockingly beautiful groupie.
Are you all new to Santa Cruz? Your first time here? Or?
I've been here a bit.
Pop down here for the day. Play some music.
We would pop down here to get our bus gone.
Get a breather out of the city for a while.
A little cold and foggy up in the city. Thought we'd get some Santa Cruz sunshine down here.
So. Kind of off and on down here.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll catch you when you're actually able to play the instruments with the strings. Okay. I guess here come the strings.
We got Tobias.
So Tobias has arrived with the strings, and maybe we'll hang for a bit to hear this. I'll give you my card so you can tune into Free Radio, which is a small station and a pirate station.
All good, man. Pirate. Well, they're Jugtown Pirates. That works out perfect.
Pirate meets pirate.
Yeah. Cool.
Arr. Woman, what's your name, Adam?
I'm Jess.
Do I get a hug?
Sure.
Well, come on over here, then. Pretty clever, eh, folks?
Are you going to grow up one of our...
Well, the Pirate Jug Pan played some great tunes, but unfortunately we didn't catch any of that. But we are here with Nessie and her beard.
But before we get back to Nessie again, we actually have a selection or two from the Jugtown Pirates because I got their CD. Here's one of their numbers. And that, of course, was the Jugtown. Well, let's stop them so I can actually get a word in edgewise here. Jugtown Pirates. And you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and the studio with me is Jess. Or is it Jessie?
Whichever. My grandma's the one that's always called me Jessie, but either is fine.
All right. We'll call you Jess, since that's what you call yourself. And, again, you can call in. And believe it or not, I think, although there is some question about how operational the phone lines are, there is a phone line. And if you tried earlier, I think it may have been due to my negligence that you weren't able to get through. But you can now, I believe. 427-3772 is the call-in number in case you want to chat with either of us, you have any reports from downtown, questions, I don't know, critical caustic comments, updates, you name it. 427-3772. If you want to be a member of the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, you should go online to freakradio.org, download the application, and turn it in. It involves paying $15 to $30 a month, because we all have to contribute to the rent, and you have to pass through our Stalinist selection committee. No Klansmen, no Nazis, no Zionists. We have a very intensive, politically correct policy. I allow such types on my show, but only after a thorough tongue lashing. So that's what happens here at Free Radio. But you can, in fact, become a member of the station. Freakradio.org is the website to go to. You can also contribute if you want, because the station runs on, you know, love, money, and, sealing wax and baling wire. We are really dependent on donations. We don't do the little KPFA marathons, you know, and that we give, allow you to spend, allow us to spend millions of dollars, you know, getting huge amounts of money from nonprofit corporations. We don't have that facility here. You pay, we play is kind of the way it works. So get in touch. You can also call us if you've got a message for us, maybe a public service announcement you want announced, maybe a question about that show you heard the other day that you'd like to get a copy of. 427-4523 is the free radio voicemail line. And that's, again, 427-4523. If you want to catch me off air to commend me on my wonderful show, you can, 423-4833. So check that out. And if you have any comments, you want to be on the air, you have any criticisms, you should call me at that number, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. It's now back to street interviews in the last half hour of the show, coming up at 8, from the cream to the dregs with the, I think Uncle Dennis may be back in the studio. He was on vacation, tromping around up in the woods somewhere, probably with Pat Kittle, who knows. But in any case, a lot of music from the 60s and 70s. He's got discs he spins until you spin out, and he's also commentary on environmental issues, so stay tuned for Dennis at 8 o'clock. And again, don't forget, if you want to be a part of the protest movement that helps restore civil rights to Santa Cruz, or look silly trying, come on down at 1 o'clock to Bunny Shoes, which again is a couple of storefronts down from the coffee roasting company. What do we say? It's at Walnut and a little bit down from, well, it's actually further down. It's further down from Walnut and it's on Pacific Avenue, toward the Cinema 9 a bit. You can find it. Bunny Shoes, and we'll be there. We'll try to shoo you in, and we won't shoo you away. So I promise bad puns will be punished. Boy, that's a pun as well. Amazing. Okay, so let's get back to street interviews, which is really what this show is all about.
Your beard. Where is your beard?
In Chicago. One of them's in San Jose right now, and one of them's in Chicago.
And can you translate that into, should we say, more, give us a definition or a synonym?
Well, her beard is just my friends who play with me. So it can be anybody, really, but it's usually these two friends of mine who live in Illinois.
CJ, stop. We have another musician coming up on me from behind. CJ, have you met Nessie? Nessie, CJ? CJ, Nessie? CJ is a guitarist. Without a guitar, I suppose.
I have a guitar.
Now you have a guitar. What happened?
Dude walked up and goes, are you CJ Stock? And I went, yeah. He goes, do you have a guitar stolen? And I went, yeah. He goes, don't go anywhere. And he came back and handed me this cute little classical guitar. This is sweetie.
And folks can, of course, hear you playing at...
Hmm?
Where can people hear you strumming?
In front of clouds.
At
night?
Yeah.
From
7 until I'm done.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, CJ, I congratulate you on the return of the guitar.
Well, it's just a little classical nylon string, which I'm not used to, but I'm getting used to it.
All right. Well, yeah. It sounds like the community supports your plan.
I got to, yeah.
Thank
this
you.
This place is wonderful. That's why we live here.
Or try to, anyway.
Try to, anyhow, yeah. I got to go dig up a buck to eat. I'm so hungry.
Go for it, man. Indeed. Cheers, man.
Nice meeting you.
So Nessa, you actually you played a tune for us, which unfortunately was not recorded, but you said you also have had an encounter with the passing police officers. One of them was, I guess, Officer Winston. He and another officer were passing by, and you said that they were not as polite as they might have been.
They were not. They told me I had to move, but they wouldn't tell me where I could move to. And I asked them explicitly where I should go, and they told me to figure it out. And then they went away, and they came back, and they said, oh, you figured it out all by yourself. Good job.
So it sounded like they were sneering at you, Brett.
I would think so, yeah.
Now, you have on some eye makeup, and you are, as you were describing before,
a feminine-identified queer person.
Here, here, and good-looking as well, we might add.
You're welcome.
But do you think, did you detect the stench of prejudice here?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they're just mean people, I don't know.
Or maybe they're just being officious police officers who are too... It sounds like they were apprehensive about some sort of homosexual panic.
That could be.
Felt that way myself at times. So... How long have you been playing in Santa Cruz?
Oh, a few months.
And I see that you've only got about $5 in the till here. How many hours have you been playing today?
Today, I've been here about an hour. This isn't typical. I used to make a lot more than this.
Because you do have a good voice. Dare I ask you to try a quick, like, I don't know, 20 or 30 second sample? You don't have any CDs on you?
I don't have any CDs on me. Do you want me to play another 20 seconds of music?
If you feel like it.
Okay.
You know,
pillow to the garden of the willow tree and tiptoe through the tulip with me.
Thank you, Nessie. I appreciate that. And if you want to hear more of Nessie's music, come check him out. He's in front of Dale Williams.
Check her out.
Sorry. Check her out. Gender confusion here. And, is there do you have anything on the internet, any places you can be reached?
My record company has a website. It's Orchestral Color, color spelled colour.com.
And there you have it. Cheers, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much. What was your name?
I'm Robert. Or woman, as the case may be. Hey, how's it going, man? So we're here outside the Trader Joe's in the parking lot. It's about 10 after 3. Yeah, I'm interviewing him. And we're talking with
Arindam Krishna Das.
And you're not only a man.
You want to interview somebody. You should interview Gary Ganshorn at the Homeless Garden Project. Gary Ganshorn at the Homeless Project.
Thank you. Right. You've got pastries, you've got literature, you've got
stickers.
Say No to Drugs, American Flags. Not my favorite stickers, mind you, but
good.
And Rock and Roll Forever, a little Hackneyed, perhaps. But you're a man who's been through this spiritual group for some time.
Yeah, I remember. Oh gosh, must have been 12 years ago. It was my first time up there helping out in the orchard. These small saplings, little tiny things that me and my son, who was a year and a half at the time, fertilize these little saplings that are now like fruit-bearing avocado trees and fruit-bearing peaches and apples up in the orchard
and
now.
What happens to these fruit? What do you do with them?
Well, they get offered up to the deities, and then they come to us as prasadam, Krishna's mercy.
Do they get to poor people's mouths is my question.
We do our best to get it out there. We have downtown every Thursday at 7:30. We have kirtan, and we're bringing a vegetarian meal to the vets hall at 7:30.
Open to the public or just the vets?
Open to the public. Open to everyone. Any spiritual seeker.
So in theory, that will be happening right now for all of you. So rush on down to the vets hall and check out the Hare Krishna food.
Anyone wanting to try some nice Hare Krishna style cooking, or it's learn about the Bhagavad Gita, the yoga of the soul, as they say. And then our beautiful temple up Rodeo Gulch, 2900 Rodeo Gulch, every Sunday is a wonderful program starting at 6:30, and probably the best vegetarian feast anyone's ever had.
So pig out, folks, and check it out. And if you have any complaints, give a call to Free Radio, and I will personally grill this man again. We've been talking with
Arindam Krishna Das. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Senor Das.
Thank you, Robert.
And Das, right. Just the facts, I guess.
That's what's up.
You're at the HRO meeting, and it's about 10 to 5 on 30th of May, 2009.
Yeah, me and
this is Aaron speaking.
Me and a friend of mine, we were storing some stuff in a friend's vehicle. You know what I mean? Like, they were like, yeah, you can put your backpacks in there, put your sleeping bag in there. So we put our stuff in the vehicle and we're walking away, right? And just because we were associated with that vehicle, like, I hadn't even known the people, but 2 days, the cops come up to me and they're asking me about, like, people that are associated with the vehicle. Who's this? Who's that? And I'm like, look, I just met them. And so they started taking my pictures, and they were calling people on the phone, talking to, like, some victim of some crime that, like... And the whole time, like, me and my buddy were like, look, we just met these people, like, 2 days ago.
Where was this?
The van was parked over in the parking garage over by Long's. And it was in the Long's parking lot that this happened. And because of the fact that we did have backpacks, you know what I mean? Like, the cops responded with, like, at one point there was 4 vehicles there with 5 cops. You know what I mean?
What crime were they investigating?
I honestly don't know.
I know what crime.
Yeah, I honestly don't know what... I had no idea what was going on. And then, like, a couple days later, I was standing in a group on the avenue right in front of New Leaf, and we were sitting up against the wall, and granted, there was alcohol in an open container there, you know what I mean? But, like, I guess somebody had stolen some alcohol from Long's, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's us that did it because we're sitting here, you know what I mean? Like... Why? That's pretty. That's like, you know. It's,
yeah,
like,
I witnessed that day.
Yeah,
you were just sitting on the corner.
Yeah,
the thing, and
yeah.
And they came right up to you, and they, yeah, you were just.
The cops.
There.
The cops even came up to.
Did you get the names of the cops?
I did not. I have
something to remember, folks. Get the names of the cops.
I have the ticket still, though.
What'd you get a ticket for?
Well, it was for shoplifting, theft by shoplifting. But the cop the next day came up to me and the other guy that got the tickets, and he said, "Hey, the lady that identified you guys said later that she wasn't 100% sure that it was either one of you or that it was even you two, so just to disregard the ticket altogether." So, I mean, like, I don't know how that came about, you know what I mean? I think it's because I go to Long's and shop there a lot, you know, and so they see me there a lot, and they know that I'm homeless because they see me sitting outside, and, like, every time I walk in there, I put my pack down, so automatically... I'm doing something bad if something bad happens. You know, I see that as pretty profiling, and that's just 2 personal experiences of my own recently involving the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Looking at your citation for shoplifting, which you were told is supposedly going to be dismissed, and the officer can... The point is, there's nothing unusual or bizarre about police pursuing a shoplifting case. And I can appreciate your feelings that, you know, you're being hassled, and the open container laws completely suck, and there are discrimination against anybody who has to drink outside. But I don't know... Did the officer treat you rudely?
Yeah, I honestly think that he was pretty cool at the beginning, and then the call in the radio about the shoplifting.
There were 4 police cars. Hey, Bert,
then, like,
I got a picture for you. Excuse me, we have to... So we're here on Lincoln, I think it is. And,
yeah.
So it looks like that interview with Aaron ended abruptly. I think Bert Glick, the poet, showed up, and I was distracted. My apologies, Aaron, for not concluding the interview, but I appreciate the information he did give us. Now we're going to be hearing a few minutes of the rather tumultuous meeting that was the beginning, one of the planning meetings for this upcoming Saturday 1 p.m. sleeping band protest in front of Bunny Shoes, and it was held on the lawn of the Calvary Episcopal Church, one of the 2 days they allow people on the lawn, or did until our meeting. And you'll begin to hear this as we were eventually told to leave the church lawn property because Father Joel Miller didn't like us meeting there.
Pacific in front of the Super Silver Saber, or is it Victoria's Dance of Costumes, around 6. Talking with
Lawrence McGregor.
Lawrence, you have some comments about Pacific Avenue's lighting.
And actually, I'm jumping ahead too far. That is coming up, but it may not be coming up tonight because we only have about 15 minutes left, and I think we're still winding our way through a few days before that particular meeting on the lawn. I really think it was I was really happy that we had this resolution of a problem with discrimination against the homeless as the homeless saw it, and bad behavior as Jack's owner Connie saw it at Jack's Hamburger Place, because regardless of what the truth was on whatever side, they've agreed to allow people in, and they've agreed to forgive past violations, whether real or imagined. And that's what counts. And Connie actually got back to me a couple days ago, and she asked me to put out the word that, you know, there's been some pissing on the back of Connie's restaurant in the last couple of days. And I would encourage people, I don't want to encourage people to go piss on the mayor's lawn or sleep on the mayor's lawn. Actually, sleeping on the mayor's lawn is a better idea than pissing on the mayor's lawn. But, you know, it's interesting. If all the bathrooms are closed at night, what are you supposed to do? I guess piss into a jar and wait till the morning. I mean, that's the cleanest thing to do, I suppose. And I certainly would propose that to everyone in a certain way. And another way, I'd say, why don't these fucking merchants and city council politicians splurge for a 24-hour bathroom? Not that everybody would use it, but I think it would certainly cut down on this so-called pissing problem. And as for, you know, urinating in public, I think, you know, if you it's certainly a bad idea to go urinate at a place that has declared a policy of non-discrimination against homeless people, and I would urge people not to do that, for sure. That doesn't mean I think pissing is an appropriate response to, as a means of protest, generally speaking. There might be some interesting circumstances. Throwing shoes at the city council or at certain bigoted merchants, as the great Iraqi patriot did back in December when American puppet al-Maliki appeared with Fuhrer George Bush, and when his last days in the Fuhrership in Baghdad, this guy threw both his shoes at Bush and missed, sadly enough. And he's, you know, he faces, I guess it's a, what is it, a one-year jail term? Outrageous, you know, for that kind of behavior. You know, an improvised explosive device might have been more befitting, although he really got a lot of plaudits for throwing those shoes, and I certainly applauded him for doing it. Anyway, let's get back to street interviews, and eventually we'll be coming up to Calvary Episcopal Church and what happened there. As I said, it's too bad when... Because the Calvary Episcopal Church, because it does provide a coffee house for homeless people on Monday nights, which is I thought was really wonderful. I went in there and it seemed quite different than the institutional religious, you know, listen to your sermon and, you know, walk really quietly and sit over there in that table, and a whole series of control devices weren't present at the Calvary Episcopal. And I think we really have to tip our hats to Rene and... who knows, maybe Father Joel himself, who is maybe responsible for this. But unfortunately, I'd rather, you know, I don't know what I'd say, not tip my hat, but throw my shoes at Father Joel, not just because he ordered me off the lawn of the church. That's fine. I can, you know, I can go somewhere else. I've got a room I can sleep in tonight. But he has declared, apparently under pressure from nearby property owners and some parishioners, that the homeless people are not welcome on the lawn 5 days a week. except for Wednesday when everybody shows up on the lawn. It's kind of hard to move people off. And Mondays when there's a church function. But even then, apparently, if they want to organize to do some downtown protests, they aren't welcome there. So it's was an unfortunate situation. I should also be said that there were some communication problems. It wasn't all, although it's a little hard to tell what Father Joel's motives were, impossible, in fact, without getting more information from him directly, which I haven't had, and perhaps Brent Adams, our great mediator, can move in and try to find out what went on with Father Joel, that he was so moved to demand we leave. We weren't causing, you know, we weren't creating a lot of noise. In fact, when there was complaints that we were too loud, we moved over so that we wouldn't be disturbing the Bible study happening inside. But we were happening at the same time as the Bible study. And Ron A. asked us if we could postpone it, and I said we can try, but if the people want to hold their meeting, we're going to hold our meeting, and we did. And I think that may have been what upset Father Joel, had him call the police on us for to make sure we left the lawn. We didn't really insist on staying in the lawn. We moved onto the sidewalk. But the whole thing was very upsetting. And as you were saying, Jess, and I have Jess in the studio still. She's a long-suffering and hanging out
here. Happy to be here.
And apparently happy to be here. At least she says she's happy to be here. She's you find that rather peculiar for a church to do, right?
Well, I just said it's a sad day when the church kicked the people off the grass. I mean, if they have nowhere else to go, the church seems like the group of people that if anyone would be there to try and give them somewhere to go.
Right, but of course, as you were saying earlier, and you've abandoned institutionalized religion yourself, you'll find in Santa Cruz, I think there are like 220 churches or more, and only a handful of them allow homeless people to sleep on their property in a vehicle. Which, you know, some of the churches have parking lots. They're unused at night.
Well, you know, really, there's a whole church building that's unused every night, probably.
Yeah, I mean,
if you really want to give somebody a home, open up these buildings
right,
and let them sleep there.
Although the sleeping ban does ban sleeping in churches. It bans sleeping in all non-domiciles. So you can't sleep in a theater, in an office building, in a garage, a beauty parlor, a business of any kind, including a church. So the entire emergency shelter program that involves going to different churches each night has itself been illegal for 20 years.
Outlawed. I did not know that.
But
that
of course,
thank you for educating
right,
me.
Right, but that, of course, the city ignores that because these are the favorite people, just as it ignores the great Morgani, who is the famous accordion player who dresses up in very colorful costumes downtown and plays illegally in front of Dale Williams Jewelers, illegal because he is within 10 feet of a building, and it's illegal to have a little display device where you can get coins, like an open guitar case and so forth, within 10 feet of a building, 10 feet of a bench, 10 feet of a kiosk, 10 feet of a corner, 10 feet of a restaurant, outdoor restaurant, 10 feet of an information sign. I could go on because they extended all these forbidden zones, but why bother? Let's hear a little more.
The problem with bike stripping.
Yeah, my bike got stripped last night, and it's been happening for the last, like, maybe 2 weeks. Every time I put new parts on, it's not enough light on the street or no cameras on the street every corner. I don't know what to do.
What was taken from your bike this time?
My shocks and my front rims.
And where was it parked?
Right in front of the New Leaf.
Interesting. Well, have you heard any other reports of this problem happening?
Yeah, with another brother from the lot, the Riverside Street Shelter. Their bike physically got stripped. It still is on the street stripped.
The bones are left.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Laura.
You're welcome.
Sorry about that.
I think that's stupid.
So it's about 5 to 4. We're here across from the Nickelodeon on the lawn of the Calvary Episcopal Church talking with...
And this is a series of interviews on the lawn before our meeting, from which we were unceremoniously moved off the lawn under threat of police escort. But again, the interviews are interesting, so I will play a little bit of them before I shut this down. We only have about 7 minutes left. In fact, again, I remind you who are listening and who want to call in, if you've been unable to call in, please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Let me know that you were trying to call in here at the studio and you couldn't. If you might want to try giving me a call right now if you want to get in touch, 427-3772, in case there's something you want to say to Jesse or to me before we wend our way off into the distance. It's an option for you. Or again, you'll find me at least. I don't know about you, Jesse, but I'll be at the 1 o'clock protest Saturday in front of Bunny's Shoes on Pacific Avenue. That's pretty close to the coffee roasting company. If you make it to the coffee roasting company in the Palomar, you'll be within sight of Bunny's Shoes. And there actually are two Bunny's Shoes. You may go back and forth trying to see which is the superior shoe product, or which doesn't shoo us away, you know, as I've said before. So, let's see if there's anything more I want to pass on from my endless reading material here. It looks like we're almost out of time here. I think the knock at the door means that we have none other than, is it Sergeant Harms? No, it's
Mr. F.
Mr. F. What are you here for, Mr. F?
We were going
to
cover Dennis.
Oh, no, Mr. F is here to cover Uncle Dennis's show. Well, this means doom and death for our attempt to usurp Dennis's time. But luckily we have 6 minutes left, Mr. F, so feel free to join us and wait for the the final end of our show. Let's see if I have anything more that I want to pass on here. Oh, yeah, for those of you who followed the Metro trespass case, and I've talked about it for hours on this program, as well as playing the entire tape. This is where I was arrested for trespass at the Metro back in November because I was interviewing homeless people and security guards about alleged harassment of homeless people. There actually began with a complaint about religious sermons, which were being blasted over the speakers on public money. I think it was probably a mistake rather than an intentional attempt to religiously propagandize the people in violation of Constitution and the law. But in any case, I was told to leave after I asked the security guard's name and badge number, and I refused to turn off my tape recorder. And that became an issue in court when, even though there was no prosecutor, the city attorney was supposed to show up, and he didn't. He didn't want to spend any money on the case. The only people who showed up was the police officer and the security guard. But the judge, I call her Snake Oil Simons. She's one of the new judges. And no offense to you, Judge Simons, that's just how I view your approach. I think that, you know, if you are a judge, you're a judge. If you're a DA, you're a DA. If you want to be a good DA, quit the judgeship, go back to being a district attorney. Don't try to perform both roles. It's inappropriate. It's intimidating. It's chilling. And it pisses me off. In any case, I got an email from, she's been engaging in certain extra-legal behaviors, which I don't have a lot of time to talk about. Join me again on Sunday at this between the, I guess, 9:30 in the morning and 1 in the afternoon, and I will talk more about this. But I did get a letter from my attorney who said he had been contacted by Judge Simons, and the contact involved a request for further briefing. Judge is apparently going to great lengths to solve what should be a relatively simple case. Security guard makes a mistake in telling somebody to leave because they haven't disrupted the business, they haven't violated any laws, they haven't even violated any Metro policies. He just didn't like the fact that when approached, I demanded the security guard's name and number. When he wouldn't give it, he demanded I stop recording. I said, are you kidding? This is the best objective record of what we're saying here. How else could I show that I wasn't being abusive, that I wasn't being obscene or violating any other ordinances? I mean, in other words, well, it's an audio recording, but there is certainly something to be said for the recording. The judge is looking into trying to show that because I was making a tape recording, even though there's no policy against it, I could somehow be, this would justify their throwing me out and arresting me, because I was arrested for this. I wasn't taken into custody, but I was given a citation, $248 citation or a $68 citation. And the city is liable. Once this ticket gets dismissed, it's a lawsuit, folks, and it goes to federal court because attorneys have already agreed to take it up. So I think the judge wants to find a way to find me guilty so there can be no lawsuit against the city. And we'll be talking more about this when I return, and that's going to be on Sunday, assuming that I'm not in jail from some silly protest activities on Saturday, where I hope you'll all be down there wearing your best shoes in front of Bunny Shoes. Ah, finally a phone call. Amazing. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Mr. F, Jesse, and Robert. Hello?
Is this, does this gentleman want to be crucified?
Which one?
The one who's talking right now.
Oh, I am talking, yes. I have no desire to be crucified, no, it's true.
Are you Robert North?
I am the same.
Well, you know, I think that is what you are striving for.
I would disagree with you, but I can I respect your right to your opinion.
I mean,
we only have about a minute left, so I'll give you that minute.
But you have spent many hundreds and thousands of hours insisting on your persecution. So you must be a Christ figure or otherwise just a nut. N-U-T. And thank you and goodbye.
Well, thank you for calling in, caller. I really do thank you for calling in because, and if we had more time, I would, of course, ask the caller what he meant by that. Often we have a lot of people who anonymously attack me on the Sentinel website or something, but here's a man who has the courage to call in. Thank you for calling in. Happy to talk to you again. If you want to be in specific about, you know, your concerns, let's talk about it on Sunday morning, 9:30 to 1. Or leave me a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and I'll pass on what your thoughts are, uncensored. Thanks for being with me, and thank you, Jesse, for coming into the studio. Mr. F.
My friends are here, so you can take another 5 minutes.
Another 5 minutes. Now we're talking. Dennis would never forgive you, but I'll gladly do that. Let me talk about what the caller, the issue the caller raised. Am I simply, you know, bemoaning my own persecution, and do I want to be crucified? The reason I talk about these issues is they don't just affect me. When I get hassled, it's really symbolic of a policy that involves a lot of other hassles as well. And that is really my concern. I mean, it's also my concern that I get hassled. I don't like when people treat me badly. And I try not to stand for it if I have the wherewithal to fight it, and if there's the time and energy and the right battle to choose. But it's certainly more relevant to consider the broader battles, for example, around the sleeping ban. The sleeping ban doesn't affect me personally. I sleep indoors. So it's not my crucifixion and my persecution, and that's really where not just hundreds of hours, but perhaps thousands and maybe 10,000s of hours have been spent in the, I don't know how many years, 14 years I've been on the air, and in the 30 years I've been in Santa Cruz, and the 20 odd years I've been fighting this issue. So the issue I fight about is really a broader principled issue of the right to sleep legally, the right to not to be persecuted or harassed if you're poor, which some people might criticize by saying, well, you know, what, you want the right to be able to wretchedly sleep on the sidewalk somewhere? You know, what about, you know, demanding some real rights like the right to medical care or the right to housing or the right to a decent standard of living, a good job, you know, the right. And these, of course, are all important rights and demands that people should have. I've kind of taken a small chunk of the pie, and what I focus on is until we reach the millennium, until we get those broader rights, we have to be able to proceed without being treated like bags of garbage as we proceed to do what we have to do, like sleep outside. Many, many people have that need. And even upper-middle-class people, like a certain attractive-looking woman in the studio, had that problem last night. Did you not, Jesse?
I did. And as I said earlier, I really would have loved to sleep in my car last night and not spend the $66 that I spent on a hotel room. Had I known that there was a safe place in the city of Santa Cruz where I could sleep in my car and not be hassled or bothered by the police, I would have done so.
And it sounds like you were worried about the police, not about marauding rapists or...
Oh, no, I was much more worried about the ticket.
Right.
Or the fine or the fees that I could not afford to pay since I'm currently unemployed.
And, yeah, I mean, that's the issue we're going to bring. We'll be coming back to talk about it again and again. You can actually do something about this directly. Make your outrage known. Make your ridicule known about this absurd law by coming on down on Saturday at 1 o'clock in front of Bunny Shoes. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, sir.
Oh, you're back.
I am back.
All right.
And I'm going to tell you something.
Make it quick, though, please.
Okay. You will be irrelevant in a couple of years, and you will rue this. But that whole approach that you are still clinging to for dear life is gone. You know the gentleman that sometimes calls the Palm Spring bum, whoever?
Craig Canada.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I could make him make money, real money, on the internet, with whatever little money he had.
Uh-huh.
Because we have, you know, the world has left your world and Craig Canada and all of that. There is a new world, and it's weird because you have a share of it. You know, you're online, you're on the internet, and you know all of these things.
Caller, let me. I would love to talk to you more. Forgive me. I really have to. I gotta surrender the mic here to Mr. F.
Where's Uncle Dennis?
Yeah, where indeed? Probably. Where is Uncle Dennis, Mr. F?
He's out in the wilderness, you know, isn't he?
He's out in the wilderness, probably running around.
I can make Mr. F. rich beyond all his imagination.
I'm going to turn over the microphone
tonight
to Mr. F. He and you can explore these avenues.
You are hopeless people in Santa Cruz. Go to Babylon.
All right, so
actually, bye bye.
Caller, are you still there? Please.
Where is Madison? Why doesn't Madison bother you anymore?
Well, I think that we're going to.
You choked. I saw it.
No, so can you go back to the riches? You're talking about the riches. Please, can you go on about that?
The Madison murderers. This is the unbelief. Okay, Robert. You know, at least you are persistent.
Thank you, caller.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. You take care. Bye bye. And thank you, all you listeners, for listening in. I'm going to play one more tune from, who the heck is this, as we go off into the sunset. This is Human Lab, and then it's Uncle Dennis. And in the meantime, please report problems you have with the police and authorities at 423-HUFF, and we'll talk more about it on Sunday or on Saturday if you show up at the protest at 1 o'clock in front of Bunny's Shoes.
Sometimes this life seems no given. Sometimes it seems only take. Ah, tell me where that good feeling. Why it seems every turn's a mistake. Give me something good. Give me something right. Give me something true. I'll open my eyes. Thank you.
That was Tokyo Police Club with Tessellate.
From their album, Elephant Shell.
Yes, yes it is. We are...
Who are we?
We're not quite sure what name we want to come up with for our three-hour special, but you may also hear us tomorrow on...
Friday,
from 4
to
5.
You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. You can check our... actual show out tomorrow, Friday, 4 to 5, The Weekend Warriors.
Yep. We'll come up with a clever pun, though, for Thursday once we've given it more thought.
Thirsty Thursday.
I was like, you know, that's the Thursday Thurriers, but...
I'm not sure if that has the same oomph.
No, it does not. Perhaps you could call us in and tell us what our name should be and what we should actually do while we are on the show. Our number is 831-427-3772.
Yeah, you can give us a call in the studio. We are going to be rocking your socks off till around 11 o'clock tonight. So we've got lots of time to play lots of music or to do lots of talking. Up to you. So give us a call in the studio. Let's see. What do we have coming up next? Right now, I think we're going to throw on a little bit more music. Let's go with... Let's see. What should we listen to?
Something awesome. Something beautiful. Something that will make our listeners glad that they tuned in right now.
Yeah. About that.
We have a caller.
Go for it.
Getting there. Hello, caller. Can you hear us talking to you?
Normally need to pick up the phone.
Hello?
Caller. Caller. 1, 2, 3. Oh, the phone line's dead.
Yeah, that's a dead phone line right there.
Excellent. Well, until then, while we figure out what is actually going on with our phone line, we are going to throw on a little bit of Arcade Fire.
Do it.
All right. This is one of my favorite songs from Arcade Fire. We are going to put on... What are we going to put on? One of my favorite songs. Let's just go with Rebellion, Lies, Arcade Fire, a classic.